and R Express LLC. For the appellant, Mr. McSherry.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of the court. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Jeff McSherry. I represent Total Quality Logistics, or TQL, in this matter. The issue before the court today is the same as in the Wildcat case, which the court just heard, which is whether an unambiguous written indemnification agreement should be enforced as written, or whether it can be its terms can be supplanted or replaced by the 1944 Globe indemnity implied indemnification terms. The answer is the indemnification agreement in this case and other cases should be enforced as written, not as rewritten by a court with implied indemnification terms from the 1944 Globe case. And there's two reasons for that. One, Globe stands on its own. It was decided in 1944, some 75 years later. We're here today to resolve this issue once and for all, and the court is looking for a rule to resolve this case, which I will get to. But basically, Ohio law is consistent. Contracts are to be enforced as written by the parties, not as rewritten by courts. Their intent is paramount, and the language they employ is paramount. There have been four decisions, at least, by the Supreme Court of Ohio that have supported this, that contracts, particularly indemnification agreements, are to be enforced as written. We've cited those in our brief, the Aetna versus Henskin, Allen versus Standard Oil, Worth versus Aetna, and the Glaspell case. So the Supreme Court has recognized previously on several occasions that Globe stood by itself for the unique facts that it dealt with. Now, what happened in this case? In this case, the parties, TQL and JK&R Express, agreed in their written contract that if the party that was in possession of any cargo during transport, there was any damage to that cargo, that party was responsible. That party in this case was JK&R. What happened in this case in the trial court is summary judgment was granted. The appellate court affirmed on the basis of the Globe factors and said, based upon Globe, you cannot prevail. The Globe factors apply. That was essentially a rewrite of TQL's contract with, That was a rewrite of TQL's contract with JK&R. And it resulted in the exact opposite result of what the parties intended. What the parties intended under their contract was that once JK&R takes possession of the load of apples, in this case, the cargo at issue, it is responsible for those apples, fully responsible and liable for those apples, up to and until it delivers those apples to its delivery location. In this case, what happened was TQL, the freight broker, was contacted by its customer to move this load of apples from the state of Washington to two locations, one in Missouri, one in New Jersey. Prior to delivery to the first location, JK&R's trailer caught fire and the load of apples were completely destroyed. Obviously, JK&R was the first party to know about this loss. The parties communicated with one another about the loss. TQL notified its customer. TQL's customer then submitted a claim to it and an invoice to it for the damage that occurred, which is approximately $86,000. Notice was still given to JK&R by TQL about the loss, both a few days after the incident and a couple months after the incident, so they were fully aware of it. They were fully aware of the amount of the loss, and TQL paid for the loss.
Counsel, did the indemnification clause say that they would be strictly liable no matter how the apples were damaged, no matter what?
The contract specifically states two things. Section 8 states that JK&R is fully responsible and liable for the apples from the time of pickup until delivery. Secondly, it states that JK&R agrees to indemnify, hold harmless, and defend TQL or its customer for any liability or claim that is made with respect to cargo damage. And that's an important
point. Would they give it an opportunity to defend that amount that was paid out?
Well, the trial court short-circuited it, and that sort of gets to some of the questions that the other justices, as well as yourself, have had, which is, what's the mechanism to resolve this dispute? So if you look at the TQL versus New Vision case, it's a common pleas case. What happened in that case was this. Same thing, damaged spinach due to warm temperatures. The motor carrier, like JK&R in our case, said that, well, they could have mitigated damages. Some of the load could have been salvaged. So the loss, instead of being $28,000, could have been $20,000. The trial court properly said, on your breach of contract claim, TQL, I'm not going to grant you summary judgment because they have a defense as to damages. So in this case, if the trial court would have said, yes, JK&R, you have a good point. The load of apples was $86,000 to loss, but you have a defense to that, you know, and you think it should be $50,000, the court should have heard evidence on that issue. Instead, the court simply supplanted the terms of our contract where it says you're responsible for the damage to the apples and said, TQL, you can't prevail. The court should have properly said, this breach of contract case needs to go to the trier of fact, and we need to determine, is $86,000 the amount of damages, or is it $50,000? The same result could have been achieved in Wildcat, which is if the fines were...
Before you leave that point, so does that mean you're asking us to remand to the trial court to consider the contract defenses? Is that the remedy you're asking for here?
If they believe that they have a valid defense, I believe that's appropriate, and the court should take that into consideration, consistent with that TQL New Vision case. If they have a defense, remand.
Assuming we agree with you about the globe factors, the order that you think we should write would be that we send this back to the trial court to consider their contract defenses. Is that, am I hearing you correctly?
Yes. So, for example, the contract, there's so much law out there from the Ohio Supreme Court that contracts are to be enforced as written. There's law that says indemnification agreements are to be enforced as written. It should be sent back, and the trial court did not consider any contract law when it considered TQL's breach of contract claim. It went straight to the indemnity, implied indemnity terms of Globe. So first, the trial court should consider, what does the contract say? What was the intent of the parties? Second, if there are defenses that the defendant has to the amount of damages, certainly the defendant can raise those defenses. In Wildcat,
counsel, excuse me. Shouldn't, in all fairness, the indemnitor be the party that's at fault, shouldn't they be there before the settlement is paid and have some say in that, rather than after the fact at the trial court to present defenses on what was paid?
It depends on what the parties agreed to. For example, TQL, their contract controls. The contract controls. Okay. If the parties say that notice has to be given, notice must be given. In TQL's contract with JK&R, there was not a notice provision. However, we did provide notice immediately. In fact, JK&R knew about the loss before we did because they were involved in the fire of the trailer.
Does the record supply a reason, a cause of the fire?
They did not have a CNO or cause and origin expert evaluate the cause of loss. They just knew that the fire started in the trailer in Montana and that it was a complete loss.
So if it was struck by lightning, an act of God, there's no possible defense. They just had to pay for it.
And that is consistent with federal transportation law, the Carmack Amendment, which is essentially, once you take possession of that cargo, you are fully responsible and liable for that cargo up to and until when you deliver it. So you are ultimately responsible. So that's why in this case, the parties understood, even under federal transportation law, and consistent with that, their agreement said, you're responsible for it once you take possession. If anything happens, you're responsible. Now, I will tell you that JK&R raised 18 affirmative defenses in their answer. One of those was act of God. impossibility of performance. So they identified a slew of defenses that ultimately did not come to fruition. So I think the key is understanding, because GLOBE, I think, has been used by lower courts without actually giving a very clear understanding of what GLOBE was doing and why it was doing what it was doing. One, it was a tort situation. There was no contract between the parties. Two, the court knew all of the facts and created the factors after it knew the facts. For example, the court and GLOBE knew that one, notice had been given by the department store to the contractor of this potential claim. Two, they knew what the settlement was and that was going to be fair and reasonable. And three, that there was actual liability that existed. So that's how GLOBE came to that conclusion. But GLOBE did that because it was inequitable. That's why it used basically implied indemnity terms, an equitable remedy to create a just result. So one, it was applying those specific facts to a unique situation, a tort situation, where no contract existed. Not only was there no contract, the court was trying to create justice or equity. In this case, what has occurred is that notion has been flipped on its head. One, we have a written indemnity agreement where the parties agree that JK&R is in fact responsible for this load of apples, and they have to reimburse TQL or its customer for the loss. Secondly, we've flipped the notion on its head. Even though the parties have agreed, we've ended up in the exact opposite position that we're supposed to be in, which is an unjust result. I believe the GLOBE court in 1944 had the wisdom to understand that it was a unique situation where no written contract existed. This court, as well as several lower courts since that time, have recognized that parties, particularly in a commercial setting, have the right to negotiate and agree to what risks and responsibilities they're going to undertake. That's what they did in this case. The parties understood the risks and responsibilities. The number one risk in the transportation industry with respect to cargo is we don't want it damaged, we don't want it lost, we don't want it stolen. Who bears responsibility when you're not in possession, and who bears responsibility when you are in possession? In this case, it's unequivocal. JK&R agreed that it was responsible. The contract says they're responsible. And even their witness testimony is that, yes, we're responsible. We were in possession of it when it was damaged. I'm looking at my time. Lastly, there's no reformation of the contract that can be done. Many times, courts can intervene in very specific circumstances if there's like an illegal contract, or if, like in a reformation situation, if the true intent of the parties is not reflected in the agreement, the court can jump in and rewrite the contract to reflect the true intent of the parties. That's not the case here. There's no reformation that is necessary. The witnesses agree that they're responsible for the damage. The contract is clear they're responsible for the damage. And this notion of enforcing the contract is longstanding in Ohio, and quite frankly, an unjust result resulted in a situation where it should not have occurred. JK&R is responsible for the damage under the contract. If they have a defense to that damage, just as Wildcat, if they have a defense to that damage, I think the trial court can properly consider that evidence or the trier of fact as to whether or not those damages should be reduced or given at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sizemore.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, I'm Chad Sizemore. I represent JK&R Express LLC. This case really has broader implications beyond a contract. This case has very broad implications for the rule of indemnity in Ohio. A central tenet of the rule of indemnity is that a party pays because they are secondarily liable, and then the burden shifts to the one that is primarily liable. Here, TQL, both on the facts and as a matter of law, had no liability. It could not be liable. TQL in Total Quality Logistics versus Red Chamber cited in my brief, went to the 12th District and obtained a decision from the 12th District holding it cannot be liable for its customers' cargo damage. So then the question becomes, why does TQL pay? TQL admitted, its corporate representative in this case admitted, that it paid this claim because it wanted to protect its business interests. There is no business interest exception to the rule of indemnity. It doesn't exist. Rule of indemnity exists when there is liability, when someone can be held secondarily liable. I want to go back to something that my colleague was discussing about.
Let me stop you there a second. So could a party negotiate for that kind of term?
It's possible, but whether it would be enforceable, I think, would be a question for another day.
Whether you think it's a question of if a party's agree to something, it'll be a question of whether or not they could even agree to that?
Well, I think...
Why shouldn't a party be able to put into a contract that it wants to be able to protect its business interests, and if you burn up the apples and it hurts our relationship with the customer, you pay for it?
Because it fundamentally, I think that would fundamentally undercut the rule of indemnity, which is a principle of law that is included in the contract. So this is not so much a matter of a court rewriting a contract or adding new terms to a contract as it is the court applying a principle of law, which is Globe indemnity, which is indemnification, and the protections, the safeguards that this court implemented with the Globe indemnity decision. So settlements are unique because, in this case, involves a settlement that Total Quality Logistics paid within about 26 days of the apples burning up. My client was sent one notice, never really had an opportunity to respond, but that's not been the main point that we've centered on. The focus of our argument has been, as has the trial court and as the 12th District focused on, was the fact that TQL just didn't present any evidence that it was legally liable to respond to this. I think related to something that, to some questions that Justice French was asking in the Wildcat arguments, what's to stop an indemnity from paying more than they should? That concern was expressly addressed by the 4th District in Blair versus Mann. To put it simply, the court was worried about, said that one of the policies underlying Globe is to prevent collusion. And that always has to be a concern with settlements, particularly when they're trying to protect their business interests. And Justice DeWine, back to your question, what's to prevent a party from agreeing? I submit there is nothing that would prevent them from writing that in the contract. It is not in this contract, however. So we're left with what does this contract say? This contract does not give Total Quality Logistics the right to pay its customers' claims. There is nothing in that contract, in that indemnification clause anywhere, that says TQL reserves the right to make these payments to its customers and then pursue you, the carrier, motor carrier, for the amounts that we paid. It's not in there. Could that be included in a contract? In all candor to the court, with other brokers like Total Quality Logistics, I have seen that in contracts. It is not in this contract.
Well, but they say that it is in the contract. Why isn't this just a question of contract interpretation, that we send it back to the trial court, let the court interpret the contract?
Because you have to consider the Globe factors in that contract, which includes the word indemnity, that they're relying on the indemnification portion of that contract. And so in analyzing, I believe the court actually did analyze the indemnification portion of this contract. The court looked at there is an indemnification provision here. All right, what is Ohio law regarding indemnification? It then went on to apply Globe Indemnity. The court, the trial court, and the Court of Appeals didn't skip over and over the indemnification clause. They read them. And then they applied the Ohio law governing indemnity. And if this court were to find that Globe Indemnity does not apply, I believe that leaves us with no standard that applies when an indemnity voluntarily pays a settlement to a third party. How can there be a meaningful challenge to the amount of the settlement that has been paid without essentially going back and trying to relitigate the entire underlying action? And that, I submit, actually accomplishes this very same thing that Globe Indemnity accomplishes, which is why you apply Globe Indemnity. Globe Indemnity has those three factors. One of those three factors is, was it reasonable?
Counsel, I heard Mr. McSherry say that it may very well be appropriate to take this matter back to the trial court and then determine the reasonableness of the payment for the apples and the liability of your client in relationship to that. If it wasn't the full, what was it, $86,000? I could be wrong on that number. But if it isn't that full number, then what is it? Is that something? And that's, I mean, you would do that in spite of Globe.
Well, two things. One thing that bears mentioning is TQL had an election of remedies in this case. TQL, when they settled with their customer less than 30 days after this fire happened, TQL received an assignment and a release. So they received their client's right, their customer's rights. So they could have chosen to sue under that assignment, but they didn't. In fact, they were very explicit that they were not doing that. Counsel,
couldn't you just, in a contract action as a defense, argue failure to mitigate and lessen your damages if they did something that, you know, increased the damages?
You could argue failure to mitigate, and I submit that is one of the same elements of Globe Indemnity. The third element of Globe, where it's what was it reasonable? I believe that is tied into it. But I think that for the fundamental premise,
Counsel, can't you get to that responsibility or that defense of failure to mitigate without bringing Globe in? Just on the basic of contract law, regardless of Globe.
I don't know that you can, because in this case, Total Quality Logistics would be returning back to the language of the contract, which I think sets up a conflict between how indemnity is written within that and the language used for the indemnity provision in that contract, and what Ohio law, the principle of Ohio law, is regarding indemnity. I don't know that the two are reconcilable. Where you can say, well, in the trial court, part of your failure to mitigate damages was the fact that you didn't owe this to begin with. I think that would probably end up leading us back to this court at some point in time. I think the easiest way and fairest way and best way to resolve this is just apply Globe. Just clarify that Globe applies to all settlements, regardless. Because we want to encourage settlements.
Regardless of what the contract says?
Regardless of how the right to indemnity arises. So the contract...
Counsel, whether it's contractual or whether... common law, you're always going to revert to Globe. Is that what you're saying?
I in the context of a settlement, I think you have to revert to Globe because of the nature of settlements.
However, counsel, the parties could agree that Globe doesn't apply. You can contract to that specific language. Do you not agree with that?
I think you could include that in a contract, but that's not in our.
If we settle a claim that you said in your brief, you cited the Worth case, and it says that indemnity is the right of a person who has been compelled to pay what another should have paid to require complete reimbursement. How was Total Quality compelled to pay anything? They chose to pay what they paid in this case. They weren't compelled.
That is correct. They were not compelled to pay anything. In fact, in the if you on their corporate representative's deposition, page 92, Mark Bostwick, he even testified that a claim actually wasn't submitted against TQL. In the deposition of Matthew Lutke, a person at TQL who worked in this internally, I believe it's page 33 of his deposition, he testified that TQL does this as a customer service. They prepare the paperwork for their clients, for their customers, and then they forward it along. So these submissions of claim were all were done without TQL actually having the liability to do it. Several points I want to just highlight regarding Total Quality Logistics not having the legal liability on this to pay, and that is, as a broker, TQL concedes they cannot be held liable. That's both under the Red Chamber decision and a federal statute. And as I mentioned, there is nothing in this contract that required Total Quality Logistics to make the payment. Nothing in the contract, if you want to turn back to the contract language, actually even authorized Total Quality Logistics to make
this payment. So you're saying that TQL gratuitously accepted this obligation to pay. They just paid gratuitously, but it was truly to maintain a favorable business relationship with Contel, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so if they're not liable by their legal relationship with Contel, is JK&R liable here?
So TQL, so this goes back to what I was saying about the assignment. So two things could have happened. Contel Fresh could have brought a claim or an action directly against JK&R Express, which these are apples, so they're not actually governed by the Carmack Amendment. They're exempt from the Carmack Amendment. But you would apply a federal common law standard, which is essentially the same as the Carmack Amendment. So TQL could have either brought that claim as the assignment, or Contel Fresh could have brought that against. Now, one of the other things that is in the record, and these are emails that are attached to the deposition transcript of Matthew Lutke. One of the things that my clients were trying to do is they were trying to verify what the amount of the apples were. And TQL was not providing them with invoices. And so that doesn't really go to the actual liability, but that's a background fact that is in the record.
Do you agree that Contel could have directly sued your client?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then you would have been in litigation with them and you would have then gone to court and made your defenses. I don't know what caused the apples to burn, but that would have been sorted out. And then if you were found to be liable, you would have to maybe argue over the amount. That would all have taken place without the involvement of TQL, correct?
That is correct.
So then TQL, to to maintain, I mean, for a legitimate reason, to maintain a good business relationship with Contel, steps in the shoes of Contel, correct?
They, yes, through an assignment, yes.
Well, right, that's how they step in their shoes. Okay, then they go after JK&R for the loss, correct?
They do.
All right.
Under an indemnification theory.
Right. So how are you disadvantaged here? You would have had to be answerable for the fire of their of the apples in either way.
Well, part of what is disadvantaged is that with the indemnification, and I think this is why, this is my speculation. This is why I think TQL wants to bring these or bring a claim like this and others under the indemnification clause, is because if they brought it under the Carmack Amendment or federal common law, there is no liability for attorney's fees and costs. If when they bring it under the indemnification agreement, that is where exposure for attorney's fees and costs come in. Because there's added liability there. So that's like, as I said,
Counsel, JKR didn't have to agree to that. The attorney's fees, right?
Well, this is a form agreement that TQL prepared, but yes, they did execute the contract. I see that my time has expired. If there are no other questions, I thank the court for its time today.
Thank you. Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
We have a little over a minute left.
Thank you. The first question that Mr. Sizemore asked was, why did TQL do this? Well, first, we want consistency in our business dealings with our customers as well as our motor carriers that we utilize. There are hundreds, if not thousands. Secondly, the release and assignment. The release and assignment is something that we obtained in this case, but we typically do not get, because what happened in this case is the loss occurs, the customer advises us, we've got $100,000 in outstanding invoices out to the customer. The customer just says, we're gonna offset your invoices, so you're only gonna get paid $14,000. So that's why we have agreements, because we want consistency in our dealings with customers as well as the motor carriers. Everybody knows the rules and responsibilities going in. Otherwise, if we don't have a contract with JK&R and other motor carriers like them, we may not get it, a release and assignment. We may not be able to recover our damages if the customer simply offsets and we don't get a release and assignment from them. On top of that, we have hundreds, if not thousands, of loads a day that we broker where losses occur. So if we have a loss, it could be $200, it could be $400, it could be $50,000. We're not going to get a loan.
Excuse me. Isn't it true that your client, being the middleman, they don't typically share with the carrier who the customer is, right? Because you don't want them knowing that.
That's correct. And that's because typically the customer does not want to do that, because the customer wants to deal with a professional broker, not an independent trucker. You know, I heard the phrase yesterday, cuss like a trucker. They want to deal with business people that, you know, they can count on to arrange for transportation and bring them motor carriers to move their product from point A to point B. So that's why they set up the relationship.
So that with JK&R not even knowing who the customer is, you can't you see their concern that you for a judgment, a business judgment, you might pay more than they're really legally entitled to pay, and then have to fight it out later at some trial court that they have defenses to that? Do you see their concern from that? That when we're dealing with settlements here, that your interests really aren't the same?
Well, I think claims, when they're made, they can be compromised. TQL can work with the motor carrier as well as the customer in trying to resolve the claim if the claim amount is in dispute. ultimately on this particular case, you know, they paid $86,000 for the apples, let's say. If that is an issue and it's a big loss, I mean, you know, certainly they can dispute that and we can resolve that. The thing that we're trying to prevent here is this. We're trying to prevent the absurdity of what occurred in the lower court. The contract clearly says that they're responsible for the loss. They agreed they're responsible for the loss because they were in possession of it. The absurdity is applying implied indemnity factors, which is all JKNR wants, a get out of jail free card, which is, look, we acknowledge we're responsible under the contract. Our witnesses acknowledge that under federal law, the Carmack Amendment, we're also responsible for the loss, but we're going to use common law indemnity definitions to say, look, we don't have to pay. So that's absurd. And Ohio contract law does not support that. The Globe Court does not support that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McSherry. We are, you've used your time, and we will take this matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you, gentlemen.